We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brent Aiken, and on tonight's episode, I will be reviewing the animated YouTube pilot, Lackadaisy. This pilot has been blowing up the last... Well, it's been out for about a week and a half now. It came out March 29th on YouTube. It was released on March 29th, this year. And it's, right now, it has 5.5 million views. I'm sure that'll continue to go up throughout the next several weeks. But it's funny because I was just scrolling through YouTube earlier this week, and while I was on my lunch break at work, and I happened to notice the thumbnail, and I saw that it was the thumbnail is what immediately caught my attention, because the name also caught my attention. I'm like, I wonder what Lackadaisy means, but I saw the thumbnail and I just immediately had to know what was going on. I didn't have enough time. I ended up watching it. No, I did watch it during my lunch break. Yeah. So yeah, I watched it during my lunch break. But the thumbnail, I had to know what was going on based on that, because the thumbnail is the three main characters, of the pilot. And two of them have like these deranged, crazy looks on their faces. Like they're both smiling, and one of them's shooting a machine gun, or a 1920s style, I guess, machine gun. And then you have the other main character, like on the side of them, or right next to them, like holding like two or three bottles of alcohol. And I'm like, okay, what the hell is this? And not in a bad way. I meant like, what the hell is this? Like, what's going on? And I watched it. I loved it. And I figured, since I have, I haven't really talked about Hazmat Hotel. I have talked about Hell of a Boss before on the podcast, which was another show that Vivian Medrano, aka Vivzypop on Instagram, she created, which was another show about demons and hell. Although they're both set in the same universe, but they're vastly different in terms of like what the plot of both shows are. And this pilot reminded me, when I watched it, I'm like, I'm getting Hazmat Hotel vibes, and it's not really, and I mean that in the best way possible, because I loved Hazmat Hotel when it came out back in, I want to say it was Halloween. Yeah, it was like October 31st, 2019, so it's been over 3 years now, and they're finally coming out with, they've been working on it since 2019, but they had to find a studio that would pick them up, and A24 picked them up, and they're finally coming out with season one, like an official season, of the show, not on YouTube, but I'm not sure where, unless A24 is like premiering a streaming service, A24 Plus or Max or Prime, or, unless they have their own streaming service coming out, I'm not sure where, season one of Hazmat Hotel is supposed to premiere. But nevertheless, I'm still going to watch it. Hopefully, it'll be available on iTunes, because I do kind of want to buy it and watch it. But, I'll watch it where it's at. I'm very much looking forward to that. It's premiering in the summer. And when I saw this pilot, it reminded me a lot of that pilot for Hazmat Hotel, in a sense that it's just a very well-animated, like, half-hour pilot that just, immediately grabbed my attention, and not just based on the thumbnail, but based on like the first few seconds, the first few minutes, first few seconds of the actual pilot, because I was just so intrigued. I was like, okay, who are these characters? What are they about? And it left me wanting more by the end of it, but it also left me wondering what was going to happen next for these characters. Where was this plot going to go? Because I got a sense that it's very story driven, I got a sense from the pilot itself that it's going to get very story driven. Because there was already a lot of story that they packed in so effortlessly into that, not even, really not even 30 minutes, it's 27 and a half minutes, counting the credits. But there's just so much jam-packed into that slightly under half-hour pilot, it's insane. But very much like Hazbin Hotel, you know, and also it reminded me of that in a sense that it's a little bit more mature. Like, it's not quite for kids, but it's not quite for adults, I guess, if that makes sense. Although, this pilot was way, well, I don't want to say tame, because that makes it sound lame. It wasn't quite as vulgar or crude as Hazbin Hotel was. And that's not me dissing Hazbin Hotel. I love that pilot. I'm just saying that it was a little bit more adult in its themes and the cursing and the sexual situations / innuendos the characters would often find themselves in. But then again, it was about demons living in hell, so I mean it kind of makes sense for it to have been a little bit more edgy and, you know, hardcore. But yeah, this one it is a little bit more mature though. Like we see like one of the characters gets a bullet. Well, he doesn't get shot in the head, but a bullet grazes by his head, and you actually see him bleeding. And I was like, oh, okay, is you know, a little dark at times. And then there's like one scene towards the beginning where they're I'll get into what the pilot's about in a second. But there's one scene where they're like grave robbing. It's like, are they grave robbing someone? But like, there's a bunch of alcohol stashed in this coffin. And one of the characters, one of the group of the main trio reads this note, and apparently, like, where the alcohol was stashed, it was like near where this guy's coffin, or where this guy was buried. And apparently he had gotten, like, I forgot exactly what it was. Because I'm looking at the pilot, like I'm rewatching it, kind of like just going through you know, like scrolling through the pilot on YouTube as I'm recording this. But I want to say he got like his guts like squished out of his body. He was struck by a runaway circus calliope near the terminus of Biddle Street, whereupon, in a cacophony of frenzied glee, he was flung bodily into the Mississippi River. And then it says, there were painstaking efforts in an attempt to try to remove him. His remains were later disentangled from the paddle wheel spokes of the SS Albatross, having been rearranged into an impressive, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Merovingian knot. He died doing what he loved, remarked his widow, by whom, yeah. So yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's like he died in a gruesome way. We don't see it, but like just the fact that like they took the time to write out this like little like column in the newspaper. I mean, like the fact that the animators took the time to actually write out like a little obituary in a way, like in a little article in this newspaper, and it actually have like this much detail in it. it's crazy. And the fact that he died so gruesomely, it's like, oh shit, that's a little dark, you know? So that's what I mean. Like it's not strictly for kids, but it's a little more adult. It's a little more mature, which I like. But yeah, so you're probably wondering what the hell the pilot's about. This was a comic series before it was a pilot. And the comic series and the pilot are both created by Tracy Butler, who also did the artwork for the comic. And basically, the pilot and the comic follow the same plot. Oh, and the comic series has also been around since July of 2006. And they've updated, you know, and added more issues to the comic, but it's been on an irregular basis. The most recent update was published in 2020. But in 2020, in 2020, they got the go-ahead to, or that's when they started to, you know, make this independently fund or, you know, and make this pilot. They're like, oh, yeah, we can, let's go ahead and make this, you know, like, Tracy wanted to make this a lot, and wanted to see if she could do it, and it was crowdfunded through a Kickstarter campaign in, I believe, 2020? Yeah, in 2020, it was crowdfunded. The campaign was originally intended to raise $85,000 for the creation of a 10-minute pilot, but it scored four times its intended budget, and the budget ended up being $330,256, and the end result was a 27.5-minute long pilot, which just goes to show how much people loved the comic that they were willing to, and I guess also how much they loved animation in general, to the point that they were willing to donate. And obviously it was a bunch of people. It wasn't just like one anonymous donor or something, like one mega fan of Lackadaisy, you know, but it just goes to show how passionate they were about the comic and animation in general, that they were willing to kick in this much money over the amount that they, Tracy originally intended. And, which is cool. And apparently like over 160 skilled artists from around the world became part of the production and creation of the pilot, so which is pretty cool. And but so going into the synopsis, like what the pilot is about, and essentially, like I said, the pilot and the comic are they're not the same, because I haven't read the comic. I didn't even know it was a comic until after watching the pilot, and then of course I found that out during the credits, and, you know, I'm like, oh, it was a comic first, that's neat. And I thought it was even more neat that the creator of the web comic, you know, also created, you know, the pilot. I'm like, oh, that's cool that she did she worked on both, that's neat, or she created both. But the plot is essentially about these anthropomorphic cat people living in 1927 St. Louis, Missouri, which, if you know anything about the 20s, the Great Depression struck at the end of that decade, but, you know, up until, like, the early to mid-20s, everything was booming. You know, the Industrial Age was happening, and, you know, Ford, you know, we got the Ford vehicles, and, you know, immigrants were coming over, you know, and everything was, you know, it was the roaring, it was called the Roaring Twenties for a reason, you know, and everything was, business was booming, and people were living it up, you know, doing the Lindy Hop, and, you know, like playing in big bands and all that, and everything else they did in the '20s. But the Prohibition happened in, like, towards the middle to late 20s, where alcohol was essentially deemed illegal by the government. It was deemed as an illicit substance. So the plot of the pilot is basically these three cats, Rocky, who plays in the band at the speakeasy that hired him to go get the alcohol. It's Rocky, his cousin Freckle, and Ivy. All three of them are basically tasked by the owner of this speakeasy, named Miss Mitzi, to go out and get alcohol. Like, she pays them to go and find any alcohol they can and bring it back, you know, so they can kind of keep the speakeasy, you know, in business. Because, you know, it's barely hanging on by a thread as it is, with the Prohibition in effect. So, you know, we start out the pilot with them, grave robbing, and apparently, yeah, the body that, you know, the body of the dude who got hit by the circus calliope, he wasn't in the, coffin. He was just, it was instead a bunch of booze that was hidden away. But, it starts, like, right away, you know, you get a sense of, like, all three of these characters' personalities. Like, Rocky's a little bit more carefree and, like, careless in a way. Ivy's a little bit more of the, like, she seems like she's sweet and innocent, but she can also be a little tougher when she wants to be, and, like, a little bit more mature than she might appear upon first glance, you know. And then, of course, we've got Freckle, who's kind of the shy and timid one, But like whenever he gets a gun in his hands, he goes apeshit. Like he goes, and you know, you see that, like I said, you see that in the thumbnail, just him going bananas, like shooting the gun, and him going insane, just blasting the machine gun, and you know, Rocky like gripping his shoulder, like, and smiling menacingly. But you know, and just the dynamic between the three already, like within the first 3 minutes, it's great. But like Rocky's supposed to be on lookout duty, and he's just like screwing around, playing his violin, like walking along this bridge, on this railroad track, on this bridge. And I was like, you're supposed to be on lookout. And he's like, no, I'm on lookout, you know. And but they end up, yeah, they end up digging up the coffin. They're like, oh yeah, okay, the booze is here. So we didn't just act. We didn't just defile this man's grave. This is the where the alcohol was buried. Okay, good. And then you know, they end up, shenanigans ensue. They end up dropping some of the alcohol, and they're like, okay, we need a spotlight. We got to find it. And as soon as Ivy begins to get the flashlight to turn it on, there is a some headlights that just turn on, and we're like, oh, there's another car here. This isn't good. They're in a graveyard. And then like, one of the people in the car, or one of the cats in the car, gets out, pulls out a Tommy gun and starts shooting. And then Ivy, you know, quickly backs the car up, and like all three of them, you know, the Freckle and Rocky climb back in the car, and they all go on this, chase throughout the town, or throughout the outskirts of the town, you know. And it's a really well animated chase. I really love how it's animated. But it's here that we meet the, like, their rival, like a rival gang of theirs, but that are essentially, they're Marigold. They're they're essentially Lackadaisy and Marigold are two rivaling alcohol smuggling rings, and they're. And the three of them are, they're these two brothers and sisters, Nicodeme, or Nico, and Seraphine, Savoy, and they're, yeah, two siblings. And then they work for this guy, Mordecai, who is, who's, like, this very cold, calculated, and I like their dynamic, too, because where Nicodeme and Seraphine are, they're very, you know, like they're very chaotic and you know, fun loving, and like they're very into their job. You know, like during the chase scene, like they're shooting and everything, and like laughing hysterically, cracking jokes, and then you just have Mordecai sitting in the back seat, like just very cold, calculated, precise, like just straight faced, like. Okay, well, you seem to have alleviated us. You seem to have alleviated us of our windshield. What are we gonna do now? And then Nico and Seraphine are like, ah, relax, we'll be fine. And but yeah, they go on this chase scene, and it's, you know, it's during this chase scene that we find out that you know, Rocky Freckle goes a little insane whenever he is around guns, because Rocky's like, okay, it's your time to shine, buddy. And he pulls out a gun from underneath the floorboard of the back seat, and it's like in this violin case, or this guitar case, I believe. And Rocky, the whole time, Freckles protesting, he's like, no, I don't want to, you know what happens when I, like, you know, in Rocky, you get a sense that Rocky knows what happens when Freckle, or no, yeah, well, yeah, you know that both of them know what happens when Freckle gets a gun, and he's like, yeah, I'd really rather not do this, but Rocky insists, and he goes apeshit and shoots the windshield, shoots Nico and Seraphine and Mordecai's windshield out from their car. And but yeah, the chase scene's really well done. And then Mordecai, like, their car ends up getting totaled, so they have to stop, and Mordecai gets out and shoots at the car, causing them to like swerve off the road and drive through the fence of a quarry. I want to say, what was the name of the Sable Stone and Quarry? So yeah, it's like a little stone and quarry factory. And yeah, it's a very tense a few minutes where they're like, where Ivy's trying to get the car started, and Rocky and Freckle are trying to hold off the Marigold gang, and or the Marigold smugglers, you know. And you know, Tommy, or not Tommy, where did I get Tommy from? my bad. Freckle is, you know, he gets a pistol from the under the, like, it's wedged in the seat of the car. He gets a little tiny, I forgot what you call them, but it's like one of those really small handguns. And, you know, he goes out and tries to distract the Marigold gang. And yeah, it's just a very tense scene where Nico and Seraphine are like cornering, Ivy, in this like shed while she's trying to get the car started. And then, Freckle is like shooting at Mordecai, but they're like both like running and dodging behind these like steel beams. And there's one scene where you get to, I mean, there, well, you see it throughout, but one scene in particular I really like that shows how calculated and precise Mordecai can be is when Freckle thinks that Ivy's about to be murdered by the brother and sister, and he's like, no, and he starts shooting as many bullets as he can out of the gun, and we cut back to Mordecai on the ground, and he's just counting to himself. He's like, 4, 5, 6, and it's like, he's like counting, because he knows what type of gun, he knows what type of gun Freckle has. He's like, okay, he's about out of bullets, I can take my shot, and not, you know, worry about getting shot in the process. And that's the part where he grazes Freckle's head, and he's about to, you know, he's about to take Freckle out, and but then Rocky, his crazy ass, he starts going insane when they crash the car in the quarry, and he just finds this whole ass crane, and like, he's not even driving it, like he puts it in forward, and it's just like driving itself throughout the quarry. And he's laughing maniacally, like speaking in this poem that he made up, and he's throwing sticks of dynamite just randomly, like willy nilly, down below. And you know, like, just goes to show that, like, I guess Freckle and Rocky are related. They both kind of go nuts in extreme situations. I mean, Freckle more so whenever there's a gun involved. But, you know, Rocky seems like, you know, but yeah, it's just going back to like how carefree and crazy he can be. It's like, I love his character. Like, it's just, it was just hilarious watching him just go ape shit in this quarry, you know? And, but then, you know, he screws up and he throws a stick of dynamite. It hits a beam of this water tower. It bounces back into the crane, like the actual neck. Not the neck of the crane, but the end of the crane where the bucket is. And he's like, oh shit. And then he falls, like he jumps out, he tears his suit that he's wearing, and he falls down, hits the ground. And then the crane hits the water tower. The dynamite blows up. It knocks a hole out of the water tower and all the water comes rushing out and they all get separated. But thankfully Ivy gets the car started and she, you know, they managed to get away in time. But, Mordecai is about to shoot at them, and specifically shoot Ivy, but there's a moment of hesitation, and he stops, and he lets them go, and I thought that was really interesting, because there's a moment during the chase on the road where Seraphine says, oh, you're not going soft on us, like, you're not reminiscing, yeah, she's like, do we have to worry about you getting sentimental, like, about the old times, and he just kind of, like, you know, frowns at her. And you know, it makes me think, I'm like, okay, I'm interested, in his character even more. Cause it's like, apparently he had, like, he used to run with the Lackadaisy smugglers, you know, like he used to run with these three, or he had some kind of a friendship or a partnership with them, whether he was like a part of the group or not, you know, he seems to have some kind of respect or past former friendship with them, and now it's kind of just gone to shit for whatever reason, and you know, it's like, okay, this is very interesting, you know, like, just finding out, like, really just being thrown, like, you know, as someone who, you know, hasn't read the comics, just being thrown into this world, like, immediately, and then having to, like, over the course of this pilot, figuring out, you know, what these characters are about and what they're doing and, you know, and their relationships and dynamics with each other was very fun. But yeah, so, yeah, they get away and they end up going back to the speakeasy, which is, like the, it's a front kind of like the, it's a cafe, like on the front, on the street, like it's like Little Daisy Cafe, but then in the back, like in these caverns, it's like in, it's like underground under the cafe, but in these caverns, there is a speakeasy, run by, Miss Mitzi. And it used to be run by her husband, but in the scene where we cut back to, like, she's up in her bedroom, because, like, she lives above the cafe, and we cut to her, and she's, like, speaking, we think she's talking with someone, but then we find out throughout that scene that she's actually speaking with her late husband. Apparently her husband, Atlas, has died, and he was murdered, but we don't know how, you know, but yeah, he died, he was murdered, and he used to run the speakeasy, but you know, and we, you know, that also sets up some very interesting like plot thread. It's like, okay, who murdered this guy? Why did they want him out of the picture? And but you know, she goes down to the she's speaking with Atlas, and she looks out the window and she sees the dingy, damaged car that Rocky, Freckle, and Ivy are driving back to the to around the block to the edge of the speakeasy. And she's like, okay, well, I guess that's my cue. And she goes down to the speakeasy, speaks with her butler / bodyguard assistant, Horatio, or I guess he's more of just a, well, I guess he's more of a bouncer in a way, but yeah, he's like a bouncer butler. And, you know, he opens the door for her, and you can see that, like, with how big the speakeasy is, it, you know, the clearly the Lackadaisy speakeasy used to be, booming, like business was booming up until, you know, prohibition, you know, up until alcohol was made illegal. And, 'cause there's only like maybe a total of 10, 15 people in there. And clearly there used to be like dozens and maybe, well, maybe not hundreds, but there used to be dozens and dozens of people in there all at once, like dancing and drinking and living it up. And, you know, and now it's not, but like, Mitzi ends up going to the bar and she has a conversation with a couple of like the regulars that are still attending the, you know, that still, visit the bar. Like, you know, like, well, actually one of them plays in the band with Rocky, Zib. And he's just kind of like, not stoic, but he's just kind of like, just kind of, he just seems like depressed and like, just kind of angsty, you know, for lack of a better word, just kind of, jaded. I guess that's a better word of looking at. He's just kind of jaded and just like, yeah, whatever, you know. And then you got Wick, who's, kind of like a professional businessman in a way. But he's like very classy and, very well-mannered. And then you got Victor, who is the bartender, who's like this very, almost, I guess he's almost like a lion tiger in a way, but he's like this Russian, he's this huge Russian, tiger. And he's got like a beret and overalls and a gray sweatshirt. And he's got an eye patch over one eye. So, you know, that he's seen and been through some shit. But yeah, and so, you know, we're introduced to some more characters too. And it's like, oh, I wonder, you know, how long they've been here and how long they've known Mitzi, you know? But you know, they talk for a little bit, and then, Rocky, Ivy, and Freckle end up showing up and they're like, hey, we got the booze. And they're holding like, you know, they clearly look disheveled and like they're, clothes are torn and ripped, and like Rocky's holding like three bottles from the entire, because there were like, I don't know, 20, 30 bottles in that coffin or in that crate. And then by the time they get there, there's only three left. And, Mitzi's like, is this all we got for what we paid for, you know, what we paid you guys for? And, you know, Rocky and the group, all three of them end up telling her, okay, yeah, well, we kind of had some setbacks. There was this this rival gang that was after us, you know, and we may have caused some property damage and desecrated a grave or two, but we got the booze, you know, we got something. And you know, at first Mitzi's a little concerned and irritated, but you know, but you can tell that she still likes them to some degree, because she's like, okay, it's fine, sweetie, you got what you got, you know, it's all good. And and of course they all take a shot of the drink, and it tastes like shit, but they're like, you know what, it's better than it's better than coffin varnish. and it is great. And the, and then of course you know, it ends with Mitzi saying that she's like, oh yeah, you guys gonna go up and sing a song, like play on stage. And Zib goes up and on stage, and Rocky goes up with his violin, and Freckle and Ivy end up dancing. Ivy, because like they kind of set this up too in the beginning, like that, and throughout we see instances of it, but like Freckle kind of has this crush on Ivy. And you know, every now and then, like, I mean, he won't make fun of him for it, but, like, you'll see Rocky kind of tease Freckle. He's like, oh, yeah, like, you're shoveling for Miss Hotsy Totsy over there, showing off your shoveling skills, like, when they were getting the booze in the beginning. And, but, yeah, you just see, like, how sweet Freckle is with Ivy. And I don't know if they get together in the comics, but I do kind of like the dynamic and the chemistry between the two. Like, it's like, oh, they're cute, you know. So I do kind of hope they get together. But yeah, Ivy asks Freckle to dance. And she's like, and it's very sweet, cute exchange of dialogue where she's like, oh, yeah, you owe me a dance. And Freckle's like, I do. And she's like, yes, I've decided. And she's like, do you know? And she starts listing off all these, you know, dances that were famous around the time. She's like, you know, the Charleston, you know, the Lindy Hop, the Roundabout. And he just keeps saying no and no. And she keeps asking more and more dances that he might not know, who may or may not know. And and then it just ends with you know, they're going up on stage. We see Rocky and Zib on stage, you know, performing with the rest of the band, and then we see Ivy and Freckle dancing. And and then we see Mitzi go over into the corner. And, like, she's, like, leaning against the wall watching the band play. And she touches her necklace. She smiles, touches her pearl necklace, and reminisces about her deceased husband, Atlas. And, like, we see as she's, like, she closes her eyes, and as she's remembering him, like, we see his hand touch her shoulder. And it's like, oh, that's a very sweet scene. And then we cut back to, and then we zoom out of the bar. Or not the bar, we zoom out of the stage in the speakeasy, and where we only see like the 15 people that are there at most, you know. And then, you know, we kind of see it kind of from Mitzi's point of view. Like, we see a flashback in a way of like how much business was booming before the whole prohibition thing came into effect, you know, before the whole law came into effect. And and yeah, the place was swinging, you know, like there were way more people there, you know, than there are currently. But, and you know, and like, and then we cut to credits, and, you know, but like the whole thing was like at the end, I'm like, again, making a comparison to Hazbin Hotel. By the end of this, I'm like, seeing how popular the place used to be, I'm like, man, I kind of want to see them get back up on their feet, you know, like kind of like gain more, well, not gain more support, but like, get back some of the clientele that they kind of lost, you know, due to the prohibition. And like with Hazbin Hotel, it's like, you know, Charlie only had like one, like she had Vaggie, who, you know, she was dating, and she's like, oh, yeah, I got you, boo. You know, like, Vaggie was, like, being supportive of Charlie, and, like, she was the staff. You know, Vaggie was the staff helping Charlie out with the hotel. And then you had Angel Dust, who was their only patron at the hotel. And then he screwed up, of course, and, like, just got into a shootout. you know, and it wasn't until Alistair showed up where Charlie was like, oh, okay, you're willing to help us. And he even brought in, like, a couple people that he knew, Nifty and Husker. But he's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to get, we're going to get this place up and running. You know, we're going to get way more people into this hotel, and rehabilitate them and send them to heaven, you know. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of that, where it's like, the owner of this place, Mitzi, is like, I remember what this place, or I am imagining what this place can be and what it used to be and what it is now. And I'd like for it to be, you know, it can obviously be more, because it used to be something else at a certain point. Although in Charlie's case, in Has Been Hotel, the hotel was never a busy place. Like, you know, they had just started up, you know. So, I mean, it's not quite the same, but it just kind of reminded me of that in a way. But yeah, no, and then we cut to the credits, and we get to see the, like, during the credits, you know, we see the cast of people that worked on it. You know, we see Tracy's name, obviously, the creator. And then we also get to see, yeah, all the storyboard artists and animators and all the voice actors. And the voice actors did a fantastic job. To make another reference to Has Been Hotel, the voice actor for Rocky, Michael Kovac, I think it's Kovac. Let me make sure I'm not butchering his name. I think it's Kovac or Kovac. It's K-O-V-A-C-H, so I believe that's right. I'll say Kovac, okay. Sorry if I'm butchering his name. But yeah, Michael Kovac, who voices one of the main characters of the three, Rocky, also voiced Angel Dust in the pilot for Has Been Hotel. Of course, they have replaced most of the cast. I mean, it's going to be mostly a new cast during the official show, like in season one. But in the pilot, it's like, oh yeah, okay. Like when Rocky started laughing, I'm like, that laugh sounds oddly familiar. And then when I looked in the credits, I'm like, oh, that's him. And then of course, Michael Ray, I mean, not Michael, Malcolm Ray from, Channel Awesome, from the Nostalgia Critic. You know, he's one of the, Doug Walker's, best friends. And obviously Doug Walker's the Nostalgia Critic, if you don't know, famous YouTuber. But, you know, when he was talking, I'm like, he sounds familiar too. And then I'm like, oh, it's Malcolm from Nostalgia Critic. Awesome. And of course, I don't know any of the other actors or actresses, like, or any of the other voice actors or voice actresses in the pilot, but despite me not knowing them, I'm sure they've been in some other stuff that, you know, a lot of people love. And it was really well done. I mean, like, their voice acting was top notch. Like, they all put in 110% when it came to their, you know, their parts, and it was great. And but during the credits, you know, we get to see, along with everyone who worked on the pilot, we also get to see, like, storyboard art and concept art for the pilot. But we also get to see, like, in between the storyboard art, we also get to see art from the actual webcomic. And like side by side, and I'm like, oh, that's neat. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then of course, there is one scene. There's a post credit scene after the credits. So we cut back to Mordecai, Nicodeme, and Seraphine. You know, just kind of hanging out next to a phone booth. Like Nicodeme and Seraphine are smoking a cigarette, leaning against a lamp post, and then we cut to Mordecai, or we see Mordecai in a phone booth calling their boss, Mr. Sweet, and, you know, telling him, he's like, hey, look, we had a little minor setback. We failed to recover the supply, and that one of our suppliers has crossed us to sell to Lackadaisy, you know, so, you know, we don't know who it is, we just know one of them is. And also, not to mention, but the feds are in town, so that's not gonna, we can't have, you know, this rival gang trying to smuggle our alcohol and causing all this chaos with the feds in town. This is gonna, you know, backfire on us if we don't fix this. And Mr. Sweet suggests that they may need to tie up some loose ends before you know, they catch wind of their operation, and that's where it ends. But yeah, so, I mean, yeah, the whole pilot I loved. Again, the voice acting was great. The animation was great. And I loved how, and you'll notice this if you watch the pilot, but if you look clearly enough, you can see, like, the pencil sketches inside the actual color and animation of the characters, which I believe Tracy, she said that she did that to kind of resemble old-school hand-drawn Disney animated movies, you know, where you could kind of, in a way, see the pencil sketches within the characters' faces, and, like, whenever their arms moved, you could kind of see it. And I like that. It made it stand out and made it a little bit more unique, but it didn't really, it was a visual, like a distinct visual style or stylistic choice, you know, but to me, it didn't make it, it didn't detract from my enjoyment. It didn't detract from my enjoyment of the pilot, but it also didn't stand out so much to where it was distracting, you know, like it didn't distract me at all. I noticed it, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I like that that's a nice touch that they added to the style. That's cool. And, the music, you know, very 1920s-esque, you know, during the credits, you can kind of see, like, an old-timey film filter, like, you know, with, like, spots popping up on the screen, you know, and, you know, the ragtime, some of the music, you know, you can hear, like, ragtime music, the piano, and during the credits, there's kind of, like, a mixture, and I guess there are parts in the actual episode, in the pilot, but you can kind of hear, like, a, sort of like an electronic remix of some of the 1920s music, and it sounds good. And, I also like that they talk like some of them are from different, you can kind of get a sense that some of them are immigrants, because, Nicodeme and Seraphine kind of speak in a mixture of, like, a Cajun and French accent, with Seraphine often, like, speaking in French, like, using French words, and then Freckle has a bit of, like, Irish in him, and Rocky's, you know, and Mitzi, are, you know, they're, like, they have a southern accent, like, you know, Missouri accent, and I like that they all kind of have their own accents in a way, because it's like, oh, yeah, it's the 20s, like, immigrants were, like, coming over, and, like, you know, the bunch of them working, and, you know, the people from all over the place, you know, and and so I like that they kind of brought that to the characters' voices. And I also like, too, that, I like that, they use, like, 1920s slang, like, in a way, like, whenever they kind of, like, I mean, obviously, the dialogue, it's not so detached from how we talk now to where you can't understand anything they're saying, you know, I mean, but, like, they speak like we do, but they don't use the lingo of today. Like, they're not, you know, like, they kind of speak how, you know, you would expect someone in, like, the Great Gatsby to speak. You know, they speak like how someone in the 20s would speak. But, you know, yeah, it's not so far in the past that where it's like, oh, yeah, I you know, they're speaking English, but I don't know what they're saying. No, you know what they're saying. It's barely 100 years in the past. You know, we could still tell what the characters are talking about, you know, and saying, even if you may not understand exactly what they're referencing, or like, and when I say reference, I don't mean like pop culture reference. I mean like reference in a sense that like, you might not understand a certain thing that they're talking about, you know, that existed back then, but it's like, you can kind of gather from context clues what they're referring to. And I like that, but yeah, I mean, you know, I'm glad I found this a few days ago. I love it, and I've been seeing more and more people react to it. So, you know, and obviously it's, I think it was at like 2 million when I saw it, like 4 days ago. And like I said, it's at 5.5 million views right now. And it's not even 2 weeks old. So, you know, I feel like with, you know, the view count and, how many people are reacting to it and talking about it on YouTube, I feel like it's gonna blow up even more, than the comics have. I mean, you know, cause there were fans of the comics, but like, again, someone like me who hasn't read the comics, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I'm curious to see, because I'm sure they'll do more with this, like, with the positive reception that the pilot's been getting, and word of mouth. I feel like they're gonna do more, they're gonna animate more, and probably make a full season. Whether that season is on YouTube, or, you know, they get picked up by a studio like Hasbro Hotel did, you know, that's still up in the air. You know, we're not quite sure yet. But I imagine Tracy Butler is probably going to want to continue this. And I hope she does, because, you know, with the Owl House coming to an end tonight, which, you know, is sad. You know, it's like another good cartoon coming to an end. It's always sad whenever a show ends, you know. But it's like, oh man, we're kind of running low on, like, new animated shows that, like, you know, kind of start out maybe a little bit episodic, but you can tell, like, there is a story that's going to form from throughout the episodes and throughout the seasons. You know, like, Gravity Falls was like that. And a lot of the more recent Disney cartoons were like that, you know. You know, Gravity Falls, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, Amphibia, and, you know, now, and now the Owl House, you know, which, the other three have ended, and with Owl House about to end, it's like, okay, with Hasbro Hotel getting picked up, and this doing pretty well, and it, you know, I get a sense that we're in a new age of animation where we're getting, you know, we're starting to slowly get some more, and some newer, animated shows that, you know, are, you know, filled with humor, you know, likable characters, but also kind of has a very deep story, like a very, not complex, but like a very, tight-knit story, you know, with, you know, plot, with, you know, I'm trying to think of the right word, but yeah, just a very well-written story that, you know, continues to develop the characters and the plot throughout, you know, and it gets, more and more, you know, you find out the backstory of these characters more, and it gets just very, very more and more story heavy as it goes on, you know, and I'm glad that we're getting that, you know, with, Hasbro Hotel and now Lackadaisy, and hopefully Disney isn't quite done with story driven, and story heavy shows yet, and hopefully they don't just stick to episodic shows, because, you know, I mean, they've made some fantastic, you know, and they've greenlit some fantastic shows, so, but regardless, with Hasbro Hotel and now Lackadaisy, you know, we thankfully have not, you know, we're thankfully now in a new age of new cartoons that are still continuing the trend and, you know, of, story-driven cartoons, you know, with likable characters and humor and all that, you know. So, I'm excited to see what else is in store for, Lackadaisy. I kind of want to read the comics, but at the same time, I don't, because I kind of want to wait and watch the show, or, like, whenever they start making more episodes, you know, and just see what they take from the comics and put in the show. Kind of like with watching The Last of Us. I'm like, I want to play the video game, but I want to wait until the show's over, because I don't want to spoil myself, you know. But anyway, I loved the pilot. Looking forward to seeing what they do next with the show, and hopefully they do more with it. If you haven't seen it yet, go watch it on YouTube. Just type in Lackadaisy. It'll pop up. And, yeah, I hope you enjoy it. I certainly did. And, you know, let's get this thing, let's get this, pilot even more views and more traction, so that way, you know, more word of mouth, so that way they'll get, picked up for more, episodes, you know. In fact, I haven't yet, but I'm gonna subscribe to their, YouTube channel later, so, you know, every little bit helps. but yeah, I guess that, does it for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Next week's episode, I'll have two episodes. I'll be reviewing, The Owl House. I'll be doing a full series review of The Owl House, because, it ends tonight. So that will be, my review of The Owl House will be up, Friday night, and then Saturday I'll be reviewing Metallica's newest album, 72 Seasons. But with that being said, I hope you guys have a great weekend, And I will see you guys next Friday. And until then, take care.